while I'm doing thank yous, I need to say thank you to my guest today. He's an interventional cardiologist with the Perry Heart Institute. Dr. Gangadhar Mullasana is our guest. And first off, it's good to see you in person. You and I have talked, but always by the phone before.
Thank you, Tom. Yes, you're right. We discussed over the phone during the COVID era, but it's nice to see face-to-face.
Yeah, it is. You know, I hope you indulge me this morning. I know it's, oh, thanks, I came in person. This is how you're going to treat me. All right? Do your friends, do your families, do your coworkers understand the intellectual and physical self-discipline it requires for you to do your job? Do they understand what it takes for you? Because you have to be self-disciplined.
That's very true. But Tom, I think one good thing about working in, you know, healthcare or as an interventional cardiologist is, yes, it is me that is working through that has to maintain the confidence and then the attention, but it's also the team that supports us. And I always like say it's actually the teamwork that makes it happen, be it in the cath lab, be it in the OR, everywhere, even in the clinic too. It works like when everyone is working their best.
But nobody can make you be disciplined.
That is true.
Especially nobody can make you be intellectually disciplined. And what I find interesting for an interventional cardiologist is there is a leading edge, and in some cases, a bleeding leading edge. It could be imagery, new insights into imagery that can afford you your job. The self-discipline making, and self-discipline constitutes itself in many different ways. If you're putting a stent in and something along that line, you don't want somebody with the shakes because they haven't eaten. There is a self-discipline that goes on that almost no one talks about. There's this casual nature. We see it on TV, and they're talking about their love life over the surgery table, right? You've seen that. That's not the world.
That is not. So I think some of this also comes from training, too. As we go in, let's say, even in the middle of the night, when we get the STEMI call and everyone's like going in, we have to be there within 30 minutes. And when the patient is on the table, you know, however sleepy you were just before you started to go to work, all of that is gone at the time you enter the cath lab because, you know, you have someone that is on the table. It's and then the other thing that keeps us really focused, I think, is also that it's not just the person. There is a family attached to the person. So what we do makes a difference, not in their lives, but, you know, so that's what I think keeps us motivated and focused.
So two teams. You've got a team yes. of healthcare working for a team that is the family because they want to see the best positive outcome.
Correct.
So, you know, what it is we've learned that Dr. Mullasana is a very humble person because it's been my experience, especially in doctors with cardiothoracic neurology, that true excellence is a path that's walked alone, while at the same time recognizing you can't do any of it without support troops, with support teams around you. Mm-hmm. So that's something I've always been interested in, because I think until somebody's had to stand exactly stone still for 2 hours in one place focused on one single item, in a world where the average male attention span is 2 minutes and 47 seconds, what an accomplishment that is.
Thank you for saying that, Tom. You know, the fact that when we are done with the procedure, when we go to the families and talk to them and say, hey, your loved one is doing good, the stent is in, the chest pain is relieved, I think that gratification is what keeps us going. I think, you know, and it's the fuel. You're right.
And it's interesting because I have other people saying, yeah, but see the reward, there's a cyclic nature to this.
Correct.
I put good in the system. The system gives me back good, that there's a thing that goes on there. And I'll tell you what, for a scientist like yourself, hard to qualify.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that. But what keeps me motivated is that, but I cannot do this without help or without like someone supporting me. And, you know, always there's a saying that if you want to go far, you have to go together. And that's where I think, you know, the team comes into play. And, you know, I'm incredibly happy to be involved with Perry Heart and Memorial Hospital of Carbondale over the last 7 years or so, because we've had a really good support team in terms of cath lab team, not just within the hospital. I have to give kudos to all the ambulance crews that, like, you know, instantly recognize, send in EKGs when they're coming in with STEMI or a chest pain. It takes a lot of work to put this into place. And I think that's what helps us excel in what we do personally and individually.
Right. So that's your way of saying peer pressure, which I also understand. But by the way, just so you know, and I'm going to go ahead and steal to go far. You have to have, I'm stealing that, by the way, just so you know.
Oh, yeah.
Me and you up front. Okay.
It's not mine. Please steal away.
Okay. So, you know, you touched on something, whether people were listening or enough, because I want to expand on this. The phone call at 3 o'clock in the morning. When you get that phone call at 3 o'clock in the morning as an interventional cardiologist, you may be putting in a stent or it may be something more complicated because, and this is presumptuous of me, because as a rule, the person had symptoms, they were given signals long in advance, and then it culminated at 3 o'clock in the morning. But chances are in the days and weeks before that 911 call and the ambulance crew came to their home or work, they knew something was wrong. True story?
Yes, Tom. Thank you for you put it really well. I think people do have some warning symptoms. It could be that they're noticing these symptoms like, you know, maybe chest pain or a tightness or a vague shoulder pain or jaw pain that probably thought will go away, or maybe it's due to something else or indigestion.
I had that questionable meatloaf. And
yes. But, you know, when there is something, it's happening day after day, I think you have to pay attention. The reason I say that is, you know, time is muscle. We don't grow the heart muscle back if we lose it. So that's the key thing you touched on. And preventing things is, you know, even though I'm an interventional cardiologist, I focus a lot on prevention too. If people receive help and get hurt early, they can avoid sometimes heart failure or a damage done to the muscle, which is permanent. Sometimes it's an unfortunate to see that.
And I find this interesting because I never until just now it occurred to me, time is muscle. Well, the same people who have strokes say the same thing about time too. Time is brain. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing. This is something that there's been a major issue on, and then pushing that is the reaction time when people have these issues, mm-hmm. whether we're talking about an interventional cardiologist like yourself or somebody who is assisting with a stroke. That you've been given a warning. Your body is actually pretty good self-diagnostic when it goes, hello, something's going on here. Yeah. And it's interesting, you know, Dr. Malasani talked about the jaw pain. I just want to touch on that real quickly. Mm-hmm. Is that, in fact, more indicative of a heart problem with a female as opposed to a male? Because I've heard this time and time again. I was curious about your thoughts.
Yes, females tend to have atypical symptoms, like, you know, a jaw pain, a shoulder pain, epigastric pain. They do not get
gastric pain.
Yes.
So, like right. So the sternum, the solar plexus.
Correct. So they often don't get the symptoms that you see on TV, like someone holding their chest. Like, you know, that's what gets advertised. But females tend to get different symptoms like that are atypical. And then they tend to ignore it. I think, you know, women tend to make sure that their family members receive care, but sometimes they put themselves the last. And that also puts them at risk of having complications. We see that in the registries when we study chest pain registries. Females tend to do worse for the same complaints that men have.
All right. You just touched on the very important part. If we have massive advertising campaigns and in media, that person proverbially clutching their chest, their shoulder pain and shooting. We've seen diagrams in advertisings mm-hmm. in the past. Okay. We see that. Women say, well, I've got this discomfort, so it's not a heart attack. Right. So we have worse outcomes when it comes to cardiological events with women because their symptoms are not typical.
Correct. And they present
Well, they're typical for women, but we haven't accepted that.
Correct. You're right.
And I find that an area for improvement is what I thought. So not to take it personal, but if you and I were never – What is the best thing for me to do to never see you professionally again?
So, Tom,
I love your charming man. Don't get the wrong idea. We're visiting this morning with Dr. Gangadhar Malasani. If I don't want to see you in the professional capacity, hovering over me with a mask, what should I do?
So this is one thing I always tell my patients. I would love to see them in the office, not in the hospital.
Right.
I would probably love to see them in outside and not even in the office, if that's what we are getting at. The things that we ought to be doing is, you know, as we hit a certain age, like if you're 40 and above, I think incorporating some things like a moderate amount of activity, such as exercise, into your daily lifestyle.
Let's stop for a moment there, because there's a bunch of new research that says this should be pushed to the front and high to the front with big, bold headline. And what's interesting about that more is the minimalist approach that's needed to get a positive outcome.
Correct. You're correct. So, and when I say that, the moderate amount of exercise is usually 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week. It is not intense, rigorous exercises that get you. Sometimes they may backfire in the sense that people are more prone to arrhythmias, especially when they take, like, you know, they do rigorous exercises. Like, we are talking about, like, athletes that run for miles and miles, and you would think that they shouldn't have any problems, but you know that there is some fibrosis in the atria that builds up over time. But what I'm talking about applies to most people in general is we should be active during the day. Every couple of hours, we should just get up and take a walk for at least 5 minutes or so. So avoiding being sedentary is the key thing. Incorporating some sort of exercise, be it anything that you like to do, because that's what you'll keep doing.
And just because you've gotten old and you think, well, I'm going to go out and walk 5 miles today, that should be incremental.
Incremental.
You know, that you go out and go, well, you know, I understand, I heard them, so I'm going to go do that.
Right.
Try 10 minutes and then 15, see how you react, and then move forward.
Correct. I meant 5 minutes to get up.
Right.
But you're right.
I was talking about running and walking.
Build up slow. See what your body can do and then gradually build up on it. And you don't have to do 30 minutes at once. You know, people have joint problems or other issues.
Didn't know that.
Yeah.
I assumed the 30 minutes so that you got up to a certain rate and stayed there.
Right. What you could do, though, is you could split it into 3 10-minute increments, 10 minutes in the morning, afternoon, and evening. So at the end of the day, what we want is people to be more physically active and get them out of the being sedentary. That is number one. And changing some dietary habits, too. As we grow older, I think, you know, our habits form when we are young and reckless. But as we grow older, we have to kind of make a change towards more lean meat, poultry, instead of, like, you know, red meat, moving towards like fish and lean meat as well, more fruits, nuts, and vegetables. Yes, they're not the tastiest, but they're healthy.
All right. Here's the problem. All right. Since meeting you every day, without exception, maybe something may go wrong where I have a cheeseburger and fries, and that's it, that I'll eat all day, right? But I'm telling you, almost every single day now, Doctor, I have steamed fresh vegetables, broccoli, corn, excellent, green, every day. And I cover it with salt.
It depends on how much.
See, I mean, you know what I mean? Because I don't like it, but you say it's good for me. I have seen it has a lot of positive effects, especially if you exercise that self-discipline that you and I talked about earlier.
Yeah.
But I was brought up that, well, yeah, if you don't like it, put salt on it, it'd be all right. See, and right, there's the same thing. Eat this, and then you think, well, okay, well, but I'll put this on it. That you can do the right thing and the wrong thing at the same time.
You're very right, Tom. And I have to really congratulate you for incorporating, like, steamed vegetables rather than anything else.
Steamed fresh.
Because, you know, canned vegetables have a ton of salt in them.
The nutrients are washed out. They've been boiled senseless. Good for camping, but if you've got a steamer in 5 minutes or a microwave, man, this is the way to go.
That is the way to go. So what I would say is, yes, if you do have heart failure, any history of heart failure, you have to watch how much salt goes in. Otherwise, you know, we do need a certain amount of sodium anyway. Not going above those limits, I think, will help you as well. And then, you know, once we make these lifestyle changes, which will help us stay healthy in the long run, not ignoring symptoms is another way that you could, you know, that's one way to avoid seeing me in the middle of the night.
Right.
Is like, you know, let's say if you start noticing any symptoms like chest pain or tightness or something that bothers you that you're not able to, like, you know, make it go away.
Catching your breath,
yeah. For the same amount of activity that you had no trouble in the past, these are the things that at least you should get an attention. See a cardiologist, see, talk to your primary care, and then, you know, if they're free, if they think that they need to do an EKG, an echo, or a stress test, that's the way to go.
I have a family member who has begun working at Prairie Heart Institute. She knows about you, but hasn't met you yet. Her name's Tabitha, it's my sister. And one of the first things that she mentioned was that she noticed working there, she's been there I think maybe 3 weeks now, and she talked about the culture, and it's kind of stunned me, and I stopped her a little bit. What do you mean? She says there's this chain of command when it comes to everybody and everything that's done. And she says the culture, she had a hard time expressing it, but she says it's pleasant to work in and good seems to get a good response from the patients that are involved. And what I found interesting was when I've talked to friends who have gone outside of this market to very male, some of these very big clinics, mm-hmm. that's also the first, they don't talk about the care as much as they notice the culture inside the building, the interaction, the contact point with the patients. And it's been my personal experience that culture is indicative of excellence. And I wonder if that's an opinion you share.
Absolutely, Tom. So, you know, Prairie Heart has been my home since after I left my training, you know. And what I have noticed is they take ownership. And that, I think, plays a big role is like, you know, they take ownership of the patient. It's not my job. It's not something that you hear. Everyone like is willing to pitch in and go the extra mile and work. For it. It actually is gratifying to see that everyone's doing it. So when that becomes a culture, when you enter into this, you almost feel inclined to do the same.
And it inspires people, I think.
Correct.
And I use the word peer pressure, and I meant that facetiously earlier because of peer and the pressure portion of it, because I don't think there has to be a pressure. You naturally gravitate towards that level because you want to be included. We're herd animals.
Correct.
If they're good, I'm good. I emulate the person that trained me. I'm good. That you create this strata, mm-hmm. and it's a little higher. You think about it as the atmosphere, right? Where's right. the best place to be? And you gravitate towards that excellence. I don't know how you create that atmosphere, especially among that many employees, but apparently somebody knows.
Right. And I think, you know, when Prairie was first founded in Springfield by Dr. Jim Dow, and then gradually it kind of spread roots, and then it...
There was a template.
Correct. There is a template for success. And, you know, when you join Prairie, you also get some cardinal rules about how you approach patient care. Because usually sometimes when you're busy training, you don't hear about it. But Prairie was something that taught me a lot about, you know, being very receptive to patients' concerns or the referring providers' concerns, making them part of your decision-making so that they actually do things what we want them to do and helping out each other. So,
and before I let you go, we're speaking once again this morning with interventional cardiologist Dr. Gangadhar Malasana. I need to issue a personal thank you to you. You have worked on a lot of my friends. In particular, the stent category. I think you might have set a record on one of them. I think he's up to 8 or 9 or something like that.
Okay.
But the first one he had, he was literally on a roof on the building not far from where we were at, had to be removed by the ambulance service, was taken into your care, and you installed his first stents. Mm-hmm. And the first thing when I saw him afterwards, I said, "Oh, dude, your color's better. I can tell on your face." And he said, "Yeah, my wife said the same thing." You've done valve work on friends of mine, mm-hmm. And before they would have gone to Missouri for that.
Correct.
So thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Like I said, it's very gratifying to hear this. You know, a lot of hard work goes into this, but I would like to acknowledge all the team members, you know, of the cath lab team that come in, and then, like I said, the ambulance crews that are involved in the STEMI work. And when it comes to the structural program or the valve program, you know, Dr. Chirakuri, Dr. McElveen, Stephanie Kelly, and then Heather, who these are all the people that stay behind the success of the program, I think. And also, I feel like it's very gratifying to see them get care here rather than travel to Missouri. Like you said, it at their age and the
time
comorbidities.
Is muscle.
Yes.
Right. So. And our guest this morning has been Dr. Gangadhar Malasana, and our guest, and it's been real fun to talk to you today. And I think I've learned a couple of things, too, so I appreciate it.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks for having me.
844.